Morning. Today's daf in Baba Basra is Sadi Beis. We are starting today, just to finish up the fifth parak of Masechta, and then we start today's daf in the new parak. Just to wrap up what we were learning yesterday, and we're going to continue learning yesterday, is destabilization of the market. The Chachamim generally took a free market approach, but out of a concern of a stable market, especially when it comes to chai nefesh, when it comes to staple goods, foods, and basic needs of the people, so there was a little bit of regulation and a little bit of manipulation of the market. Yesterday we spoke out Shmuel, Avuda Shmuel, and together with his father. Each had their own strategy in terms of how to create stability within the market, make sure that the prices of foods were checked and fair. So they each had the strategies in which and what to do. The Gemara then segued into a discussion of leaving Eretz Yisrael as a result of famine, meaning what if there is instability in the market, and what if you really have a difficult time getting food? So is that enough reason to leave Eretz Yisrael? So the Gemara yesterday took that opportunity to discuss Elimelech together with his wife, Naomi, together with their children, Machlon and Kilion. And we know, and the Navi tells us in Megillas Rus, that they left Eretz Yisrael as a result of the famine. And the Gemara yesterday took a very strong approach, chastising them, censoring them for leaving Eretz Yisrael. It afforded the opportunity of the Gemara yesterday to go over some of the points regarding Elimelech, together with some of the other details regarding the incident of Rus. The Gemara today, we are going to be starting today. Rav Yochanan. Rav Yochanan limits this halacha, meaning that you're not allowed to leave Eretz Yisrael if times are tough and prices are really high. Rav Yochanan says that's true. I'll start back from Rav Yochanan. Amar Rabba Bar Bachanan Rav Yochanan. Tzan Sadi Aleph on the base. It's about 10 lines from the top of the Amud. We did a little bit of this yesterday, but I'll just pick it up from this point in time. The Gemara quotes the name Rav Yochanan Loshen Ola Bamos Bezol Peres Biyoker. That's only if the if money's cheap, but the food is expensive, meaning is there money circulating? So if money is circulating and people can get their hands on money, so then yeah, even if things cost more, so then you don't have a dispensation to leave Eretz Yisrael. Avamos biyoker, but let's say money's at a premium, meaning there's not a lot of money circulating, and to get your hands on money is really difficult. Afilo amda arba sa'im b'sela, even if you can get four sa'a, four one sela. So that's relative to what we saw yesterday. That's a lot. Meaning we were talking yesterday of getting two sa'a for a sella. We're talking about yesterday getting one sa'a for a sella. So getting four sa'a for a sella is a lot of grain. But money's really at a premium. Money's not circulating. So in that case, Yotzin, so then you do have an allowance, a legitimacy of leaving Eretz Yisrael. Okay, the Gemara then gives a simanim siman sella poa charuva talya amrin. Okay, so mnemonic to help commit the next Gemara's to memory. The Gemara continues. De amar Rav Yochanan nehirna. Rav Yochanan says, I have the following recollections. We're going to have now memories that Rav Yochanan himself is going to give regarding his childhood in the past. So I'm Rav Yochanan here now. I remember. The price of wheat wasn't that bad. You can get four saw in for a sella. And again, that's for me to call it reasonable. It just, you know, it's not totally informed opinion, but it's good. Meaning it's a good amount of wheat. But have an efficient kap and betveria medulai sister. But money was so out of circulation, people couldn't get their hands on money, and people were dying of starvation. Dying is a little bit of hyperbole, but people were starving. People were starving as the fact that people didn't have iser. Iser is the coin in their hands because they just simply didn't have the means in which to buy the food. So the price of food was reasonable, but money was really at a premium, and there was no money circulating, and so therefore Rav Yochanan says, I have that recollection. The Amar Rav Yochanan, and as long as Rav Yochanan is giving us that memory, Rav Yochanan also treats us to other memories that he had. The Amar Rav Yochanan, here now I remember, Kadlo Hava Mitagrin Pa'ale Libmadnach. Madnach is synonymous with the word Mizrach. I remember workers, so they would never take work that involved working lands in the east. Why? Because Lemidnach Karta, to the east of the city, because Meirech Pita Meisan, because there was a strong west wind, and the west wind would blow through the city out into the fields. In the cities they were baking, the aroma was very strong, and they would smell the bread while they were working. And I guess similar to what we just described, under times where people were food was really scarce, or money was really scarce, and money was at a premium, and so people would just simply not take jobs east of the city because of that aroma that would really drive them crazy. I'm Rav Yochanan Nehirna. Rav Yochanan also gives us another recollection that he has. Kadhava Batsa Yanuka Charuva. I remember that when a child would take the charuva, the boxer. I know yesterday I poked a little bit of fun of the boxer, but you know, the boxer that you and I eat. So I'm not going to do that again today. But yeah, I remember, says Rav Yochanan, that the charuva used to be so juicy, so moist, so sweet. V'hava nagid chuta deduvsha al train dahori. And when the child would separate it, there'd be like the sap, the honey, that come out of the charuva and would cover both of the child's arms. I remember the carob used to be that juicy, that sweet. Now Rav Elazar is going to give us some of his recollections. Rav Elazar was a colleague, student of Rav Yochanan. I remember. I remember when the raven took meat. And a trail of fat went from the piece of meat from where the raven was flying in the sky all the way down to the ground. Again, the idea that the meat was so juicy, was so moist, it was so fatty, that the fat, you could see the trail of fat. V'am Rav Yochanan Nehirna. Rav Yochanan gives us another recollection. I remember. Could have a matayan tali v'tayasa. A young man, a young woman would be walking b'shuka. They would be walking in the marketplace. K'var shisusrei, k'var shevusrei. 16 years of age, 17 years of age. V'lo havechatan, and they wouldn't sin. In other words, those were the quote-unquote good old days. And contrast that, and the Gemara doesn't say this, but it seems to be the unstated point that he was making is that that's not the case nowadays. Nowadays, meaning Rav Yochanan in his later years, that when children, when boys and girls would assemble, teenage boys and girls would assemble, so they no longer don't sin. V'am Rav Yochanan Nehirna. Rav Yochanan gives another recollection. I remember. Karava Amr Be Medrasha. The following statement was made in the Beis Medrash. Modelu nafal b'yadayin. I'm going to first translate it literally. If you admit to them, you're going to fall into their hands. And demisrachetz alein. And if you put your trust in them, dilei dilhon. Whatever is yours ends up becoming theirs. Cryptic statement made in the Beis Medrash. What does that mean? The Rashbam. The Rashbam explains the Modulahon. The Rashbam over here covers both sides of the Daf. So the Rashbam over here is on the right hand side. There's no Tosfos on the summit. The Modulahon, the Rashbam writes on the right hand side, right halfway down the column. Basically, you hear the Ovdei Avodah Zarah, the idolaters, and you nod your head. You're like, yeah, that sounds good. Okay, worshipping the sun, worshipping the moon, yeah, good, sounds good. So, good. So, nafal b'yadayin. So, ela kol divrei miyastur. What's going to end up happening if you admit to what they're saying, if you agree to what they're saying, even if it's a tacit agreement, ultimately, you're going to fall to their hands. You're going to end up capitulating. What you need to do, says the Rashbam, is you should be contradicting what they're saying, not agreeing what they were saying. And the next statement, the Rashbam explains, the Mizrachis. And if you put your trust in them, and basically now you have confidence in them and you confide in them. So the Rashbam says eventually what's going to end up happening is you think that they have your confidence, you have their confidence, and you confide with them. Eventually they're going to take whatever belongs to you. They're going to come into your house, they're going to take whatever is yours. So basically you're going to lose your religion and you're going to lose your money as well. Back to the Gemara, halfway down on the Amud, on Sadi Alpha Amud Beis. Ksiv, the Pasuk says, Machlam v'kilyon. So, the two sons of Eli Melech, as reported to us in Sefer Rus, their names were Machlam and Kilyon. Uksiv, now, going to Divrei Hayamim, where the Divrei Hayamim chronicles, in English, that's what they call it chronicles, it chronicles the same generations, but with some differences. Here, notably, the names of Eli Melech's children are not in Divrei Yamim referred to as Machlon Kilyon, but rather as Yoash Visaraf. And so the name game, it's not a game, but the classic discussion in the Gemara, what's their proper name and what's their nickname? Meaning that one of the Nevi'im is not describing them by their actual name, but giving them more a descriptive name, an adjective, rather than a noun. So Rav Shmuel Charamar, so Rav Shmuel have the debate, and one is of the opinion Machlon Kilyon Shman, their actual names were Machlon Kilyon, Avalam Nikram Shman, Sarafi Yoash, or Yoash Vesaraf, and why are they referred to in Divrei Yamim with these names? Yoash, so the Gemara now darshins, Shinis Yashim and Agula, totally gave up on the redemption, which in the context makes perfect sense. Meaning, they, together with the father, together with the mother, so they left Eretz Yisrael thinking that, oh, there's a famine, oh, we have no hope over here, let's leave. Saraf, Shinis Chayv V'Sreifa L'Makom. And Saraf, because they were deserving of Sreifa. Meaning, as a result of the fact that they left Eretz Yisrael, they were not supportive of the brethren in Eretz Yisrael, but they left Eretz Yisrael, so they were Chayv Sreifa. Charamar Yosh V'Saraf Shman. Now, the other position is no. The Pesukim and Divrei Yamim are giving us their actual name. Lamini Krush Ma Machlon Kilyon. Machlon Kilyon are the adjectives, they're the descriptive names. Machlon Shasu Gufan Chulin. The Machlon is a result of the fact that he made his body mundane, profane. How did he do so? The Rashman writes over here quite succinctly, Chulin from the word Chutzlaretz. The Chutzlaretz, Eretz Temeahi. All right, it's a land that's defiled. So they left Eretz Yisrael, land of Kedusha. They go to a mundane land. They went to Eretz Moav. So so that's the Machlon, that's the Chulin. And Kilyon, Shinis Chayv Kilyon, and Kilyon, because they were destined to be destroyed by Kadosh Baruch Hu as a result of their action. Tanya, Kaman Dama, Machlon, the Kilyon, Shman, the Tanya. The Gemara quotes the Brisa supporting that Machlon and Kilyon were actually their names. Why? Because of the following Brisa. My Dechsiv, the Brisa. Quotes the pasuk from Divrei Yamim, V'yokim, V'anshei Kuziva, V'yawash, V'sar V'asher, Balu L'moav, V'yash V'lechem V'advarim Atikim. And it's a cryptic pasuk in Divrei Yamim, and the Gemara now goes into Darshan, every word of this pasuk. V'yokim Ze Yoshia. So the Yokim is a reference to Yehoshua. Why is he referred to as Yokim? Gemara goes on to explain, She'ekim Shvu Alanshei Givon. Because Yehoshua made a pact, a treaty together with Givon, they thought that Givon was outside was not one of the seven Canaanite nations. It turns out that they were one of the seven Canaanite nations, and despite the fact that Yehoshua made a treaty with them, and you're not allowed to make a treaty with them, but he did make a treaty with them, and he upheld his treaty that he made with them. Anshe Kuziva, Elu Anshe Givon. The Anshe Kuziva is the reference to the members of Givon. Shechazvu b'Yehoshua, they lied to Yehoshua. V'yosh v'saraf elu machlon v'kilyon. And Yoash and Saraf is machlon and kilyon. V'lam nekrosh mam Yoash v'saraf. So again, a repetition of what we said earlier. Clearly, this Braisa views their actual names as Machlon and Kilyon, and Yoash and Saraf are the descriptive names as a result of their actions. Asher Balu LaMoav, they had relations with Moabites. We could figure that out, but the Gemara spells it out. Shenasu Nashim Moavios, they married Moabite women. Nerus and Arpa, V'yash V'lechem, and eating bread zebrus and Moavios Shavav Nidbika. Beis Lachem Yehuda. The Yashva Lachem is a reference to Rus because she ends up going back together with her mother-in-law to Beis Lachem. That's the Lachem. V'advar Matikim. And finally, the last words of this pasuk in Divrei Yamim. The matters are old. What is that a reference to? Dvarim Halalu Atik Yomen Amaran. These things were said by the Atik Yomen. Right, the real elder. Elder over here with a capital E. Meaning a Kadosh Baruch Hu. Meaning, it seems like a strange story, and a lot of plot twists, and all this was designed by a Kadosh Baruch Hu. Dichsiv matzasi David avdi. The pasuk says, "I found David." Uksiv shtei benosecha hanimtzaos. So you see that the word nimtza means that they were found, but it's more than just found. Meaning that a Kadosh Baruch Hu designed it this way. We are back to the pasuk in Divrei Hayamim. The Gemara goes on to explore and explain a little bit more in these pesukim in Divrei Hayamim. The pasuk says, "Hema hayotzim v'yoshu in the time v'gadri mamelach mamelachto yashu sham." Another pasuk in Devar Hayamim, and again, the Gemara now is going to darshan every word of the pasuk. Hema ha-yotzrim, they are the yotzrim, el ben ha-yonadav, ben rechav, shenatzru shvos avihem. This is a reference to psukim in Yirmiyahu. Their father made a pact, a shvu, an oath. Their sons were not to drink wine. They're not to live in houses. Okay, the Rashbam over here very succinctly goes through it. They, the children, kept the shvua of their father. Yoshve Nitaim Zeshlomo. And sitting amongst that which was planted, that's a reference to Shlomo. Shedom Latia, the Machuso. His monarchy was that like of a tree. Continuous growth. Vigadra, Zu Sanhedrin. The Gadra mentioned in Devar Hayamim is a reference to Sanhedrin. Shegadra Pirtasem Sheyisrael, they fenced up for the Jewish people. Right? Asu Siyag LaTorah. The Chachamim's job is to make fences around the Torah, to protect the Torah. That's the Gidreim. Im HaMelch Mamlachto Yashu Sham Zerusa Maviyah. And as far as the king over here is a reference to Rus. Sherasa B'machu Shlomo Ben Beno Shel Ben Bena. She lived all the way to the point where she was able to see Shlomo in his monarchy. That is many generations. Yes, that's correct. That's many generations post herself, but right, Shlomo was the son of David, who was the son of Yishai, who was the son of Oved, who was her son. So in other words, you go down that genealogy, and she was able to see her, what is it? It's her great-grandson. Shenemar v'yalsim kiseh le'im ha-melech. And you look at the psukim over there, a seat was set up for the mother of the king. Mother over here means the matriarch of the king. V'amar v'lazor le'im ha-shomachos. She's a matriarch. She's a matriarch of monarchy. Tanur Rabbanan, the Gemara quotes another pasuk, not relevant to the Rus episode, but rather just having to do with this idea that we talked earlier yesterday about not hoarding, but there is an exception where you are allowed to hoard, and that is in anticipation of the Shemitah. You know that during the Shemitah year we're not going to plant. We know that the year post-Shemitah you're also just going to start to plant. And so that means that which you grow the year before Shemitah has to last for 3 years. The year before Shemitah, the Shemitah year, and the post-Shemitah year as well. Tanur Rabbanan, the Gemara quotes the Pasuk in the Tochacha. But this is on the front end of the Tochacha, this is the Bracha. The pasuk says, "Va'achaltem min ha'tvua yashan." So you're going to be eating from tvua yashan. You're going to be eating from old grain. Actually, this is even before the tochacha. This is already back in Parshas Bahar. But anyway, you're going to be eating the old grain. Below salmanaton, there will be no. I guess we can call it salmonella, but that's not okay. That's not a good translation. But in other words, there won't be something bad in the grain. What is that bad that we're referring to? My below samanaton. That's the Gemara's next point. Rav Nachman amarla below ritzinasa. So Rav Nachman says that there won't be any worm infestation in the grain that's going to be stored over this course of time. Rav Shesha amar below shadifa. Rav Shesha says that there won't be any wind that will ruin the grain. Tanya kavasa de Rav Shesha, Tanya kavasa de Rav Nachman. Now they really are saying similar pshatim to one another. It's just a question of why the grain is going to go bad. What's the definition of samanaton? The Gemara is going to quote brises that support each of these explanations. Tanya kavasi derav Nachum v'achaltan yashan. The pasuk says you're going to be old. Yachli yehei yisrael mitzapam lechadash. You think now that by the end of the Shemitah and the year after the Shemitah, the Jews are going to be so looking forward to eating the new grain, mibnei yashan shekala, because we no longer have any of the old grain, but that's not the case. Tamalamar ad ba tvuasa, ad shetava tvua me'elaha. Meaning, we're not going to wait with bated breath for the new grain. The old grain is still going to be there. This is supportive of the...
How did they offer Ard Omer in those years?
Right, so the Gemara Menachos discusses that. I think I'm going on memory. It's a long time ago we did Menachos, so I think they set aside certain lands specific for the Mincha. I think so. Okay, so the Achitavo Tvua Me'alaha. So and this first Brisa is is supportive of the first pshat, that it has to do with worm infestation. So the second brace over here, similar idea, that by the time that the third year rolls around, we're still going to have the old grain. I might have thought that the old grain went bad, meaning it got wind struck. It's the same idea. That no, we're still going to have the old grain. The old grain is still going to be with us even while we're growing the new grain. The pasuk says you're going to be eating yashan oshan, really old grain. Vintage is better. Vintage is better. The Gemara says, "Ve'ainly alad varm shadarkon liyashnan." Now the Gemara says, "Now I might have thought that's true with things that are supposed to stay with time, get better with time." Dvarim shein darkon liyashnan minayin. But how do I know that that's true for even things that are not necessarily vintaged, things that are not necessarily better with age? Amalamar yashan oshan mikom akom. The Torah says, "No, yashan oshan," meaning even those things which are quote unquote not better with age, grain, wheat. Gets better with age? Not necessarily. But that's the bracha that the Jewish people get in Eretz Yisrael. That the grain, the longer it stays, the better it gets. You have the otzos, the storehouses that still have the old grain, but the granos, the granary, which is from the new crop, the post-shemitah year crop, are ready now to be moved from the granary into the silo, but the silo is still filled from the old. Well, what are we supposed to do now? Meaning, this is a good kvetch. This is like one of the, you know, this is a positive kvetch. We're supposed to now take the grain out of the silo for the new grain that we grew. The grain out of the silo is fantastic. But that's exactly the point. Meaning, that's the kind of kvetch that we want. Amra Papa Komila Atikem Alia. Rapapa says, everything old is better. Levar mitam reshichra v'harsana. Except for dates, beer, and fish. They do not get better with age. They are things that... The only things that don't improve with age. I guess I could just make one editorial note. Rav Papa made his money selling beer, date beer to be specific. So you know I'm not trying to be cynical, but you know he wants a quick return on the beer that he made. But I assume that he has this as Ayidem Masara. Hajal Chamocher Sesvina, and that is the end of the fifth Parak Baba Basra, and now we begin. We begin the sixth Parak Baba Basra, but thematically it's the same as Prakim Dal Vehe. Prakim Dal Vehe talked about sale. Fourth Parak dealt with the sale of property. Fifth Parak dealt with the sale of commodities. It started with boats, and we moved on from there. And the sixth Parak Baba Basra also deals with the sale. And the first sugya of the sixth Parak Baba Basra is a really popular sugya because it treats us to the topic of Ein Hochin Achar Mamon, Ein Hochin Mamon Achar Rov. And when it comes to monetary law, we don't follow the majority. Stay tuned. It's going to be most of our discussion in the first sugya of the sixth parak. Let's begin the Mishnah. Hamocher b'es l'chaver, you sell fruit to a friend. Vizaran. Now what your friend does, what the purchaser does, is he takes the fruit and he plants it. So, what kind of fruit are we talking about over here? So if we're talking about apples and oranges, it goes without saying that the purchaser of an apple and an orange could be buying it for the purposes of seeding, or could be buying it simply for the purpose of eating. Okay, so let's make the chiddush even better of the Mishnah. Meaning, when we're talking about peros, we're not just necessarily talking about fruit. We're talking about, let's say, edible seeds. And you'll see what I'm saying is absolutely correct. We're going to go through the Rashbam together in just a moment. Hamocher peros l'chaver v'zaran. So I'm selling seeds to somebody. Now, the seller is selling seeds for what purpose? Not perfectly clear. Meaning the buyer is buying seeds either to eat them or to plant them. But the buyer and seller didn't communicate what the purpose of these seeds were in the sale. The Mishnah teaches us the following chiddush. Hamocher peros l'chaver v'zaran v'lo samcho. Now let's say the seeds were bad. Meaning, again, you're talking to a non-farmer over here. I'm not an agrarian. But the seeds were only good for eating. The seeds were not good for planting. But the buyer didn't tell the seller that his purpose was to plant the seeds. Va'afilu pishtan, and even if it's flaxseed, now generally speaking, flaxseed is planted. Now, yes, flaxseed is also consumed as well. You can turn it into oil. You can press it and make oil out of it. And I'm guessing that you can even eat it straight out as well. But generally speaking, when people buy flaxseed, it's for the purposes of planting. The point the Mishnah is making is as follows. Because the buyer didn't tell the seller, I'm buying them for seeds. They better be good for seeding. He didn't say that. So now the seller has a legitimate defense against the buyer. And that is the seller can say to the buyer, you didn't tell me why you were buying them. I thought you were buying them for eating. I didn't know you were buying them for seeding. And so even though they were bad seeds, literally here, even though they were bad seeds, but you didn't tell me that that was the purpose of your purchase, and therefore the Mishnah teaches us a chiddush, and that is, sale is valid, and the purchaser's complaint, hey, these aren't good seeds, is not a valid taina, it's not a valid claim against the purchaser, because he didn't tell them that he was buying them for seeding. Shimon Gamliel Omer, now, the Gemara is going to be clear about this next point of the Mishnah, but I'll read it now into the Mishnah. The Rashbam over here says it, that this is the Pshat. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel is not arguing with the Tanakhama. He's just simply now arriving at the logical conclusion, which is, Zaruni Gina Sheinu Nechalem. Let's say you buy the kinds of seeds that are just simply inedible. You buy pits. Inedible. So, it's clear that the purchaser is buying them for the purpose of seeding. So, and they turn out to be not good seeds. They were bad seeds. Chayav b'achriyusa. Under those circumstances, there can be no ambiguity between buyer and seller. Because you're buying something that can only be used for seeding and can't be used for eating, as a result of that, now the buyer has a legitimate complaint against the seller. You knew I was going to plant them. You knew they were bad seeds. And so therefore, what he can expect and is entitled to is a full reimbursement of the seeds that he purchased.
The ratio is about produce. The sefer is about seeds. Two different.
That's why when I read the Mishnah, I was hopefully clear. The word peros in the beginning of the Mishnah is not just fruit. In fact, you don't have to. I mean, you could trust me, but my rebbe in YU was Rabbi Braunschweigel. He had a great line. He said a number of times. He says, "In Hashem, you should have full emuna." He says, "In learning, you should have no emuna." He says, that's such a good line. So the. Meaning that, you know, in other words, I'll say something, but, you know, you don't trust me. In other words, look it up. Anyway, I'll read the Rashbam. So the Rashbam over here, writes as follows. Hamocher Peros. I'm going to read the first couple of Rashbams on the Mishnah. Hamocher Peros Stam v'lo pirshim lezriam l'achila. So like I explained, so when the buyer bought it, there was no clear communication between buyer and seller whether his plan was to eat it or to plant it. V'zaran alokech, and then the buyer planted the seeds. V'lo samchu. Lomi buy, the Rashbam goes on to write. Lomi buy Peros. We're not just talking about fruit. Where there clearly there is clear ambiguity in the sale. I would even go the other way, by the way. It's not just clear ambiguity. Normally when you buy fruit, you're buying them to eat. But the Rashbam says, well, we can even go further. Even if it's flaxseed, which I explained already, but the Rashbam here says it, flaxseed is normally planted. It's not normally eaten. The rov pishtan hanikach ba'olam lezriya konim. Oh, so most people who buy flax seeds buy for the purpose of seeds. They came to eat the zavinam elachil, but some people buy them to eat them. Kidam rinan, the Rashbam quotes the Gemara Nedarim, luliva dekitna lekutcha enoch lekutcha. Some people take the leaves of the flax and they use it for the kutach, meaning it's edible. Enochai be'achrisam damas lamem. Here, because it wasn't a clear communication between the buyer and the seller, in this case, from the buyer to the seller, that I'm buying them only for seeding. I'm not buying them for eating. Because there wasn't that clear communication, as a result of that, now the seller can say to the buyer, you didn't tell me why you were buying them, and I know most people buy them for seeds, but some people eat them, and you know what? Because we weren't clear in that communication, the sale is not voided, the sale is final. And what about rov? What about the fact that most people buy flaxseed for seeding? This is a monetary issue. And the Rashbam over here introduces us to the topic, which is going to take most of our time today, which is, the Rashbam writes, Debe Mamona laws in Abasaruba, Kiddushmuel. Shmuel's opinion, which we'll see later this morning, is of the opinion that on monetary issues, we don't follow rov. Most people do buy the flaxseeds for seeding. That's true. But some people buy it for eating. And you didn't tell me that you were going to seed with it. And therefore, I can rightfully say, even though majority of people plant it, some people eat it, therefore the sale is finalized. And Bigmar Vidafka, Zerah Pishta Mishim de Chazel Achilava, Zerah Nagina Gigon, Zerah Kruv, Vikapulushenu Necha Klal, Chai Berchurism, Shera Shim Gamal Omer, Zeruni, Hachim Mefarsh Bigmar. And then what Rabbi Shimon Gamaliel does, I know I'm repeating myself, but I'm just reading the Rashbam, is that Rabbi Shimon Gamaliel just simply takes us to the next point of the Mishnah, which is that if it's the kind of seed that's inedible, so clearly then the purpose of the purchase was to plant, not to buy. Okay, we could spend time with the next Rashbam as well. I'm going to go to the Gemara. I'm going to start the sugya right now. Itmar. Hamocher shur lechaver v'nimsa nakhan. Okay, now this is really a independent discussion, but as the Rashbam points out, our Mishnah is going to weigh in on the discussion, so the Gemara brings it up over here. The same discussion also is brought, we learned back in Baba Kama, so in terms of a sugya, we saw the sugya already before, but this is, I guess you could call this like the prime location of this sugya. The Gemara introduces the sugya with the following scenario. Hamokhashur l'chaver v'nimtza nakhan. I buy an ox for my friend. Ox is crazy. It's nakhan. And it didn't just start after the purchase. The seller knew the whole time that the ox was crazy. Crazy meaning, try to plow with this ox. The ox is not going to walk in a straight line. It's a wild ox. It's going to go all over the place. So now, the buyer's going to say to the seller, wait one second. You didn't tell me that the ox was crazy. And I was planning on plowing with the ox. I want a full refund on the ox. And the seller says to the buyer, but wait one second. You didn't tell me that. And you know, yeah, most people do plow with the ox. But some people, you know what they do when they buy an ox? They shecht it. Now, the meat of an ox is not going to make any difference whether it's wild or whether it's calm. Okay. And so, at least it shouldn't make a difference. And so now, can the buyer demand a refund? Rav Amar is a mekachsal. So Rav says, yep, the buyer can demand a refund. Shmuel Amar Yechol Amar Lo L'Shchita Macharti Lach. And Shmuel's of the opinion, no. Since the seller can say to the buyer, look, I know that most people buy it for the purposes of plowing, but you didn't tell me that. And I thought you were buying it for shechting. So from my perspective, it's not a mekachtos. This is not a voided sale because you didn't tell me why you were buying it. And for shechting, the animal's perfect for shechting. For plowing, the animal's a disaster. But you didn't tell me why you were going to buy it. And therefore, the seller has now a counterclaim, which is, I didn't know. And so therefore, according to Shmuel, we're going to award, in this case, the seller, meaning that the sale will be final. Okay, an important Rashbam over here. The Rashbam writes, L'shchita mechart yalach, and this is now the Rashbam explaining the opinion of Shmuel. Da'ika d'zav l'shchita, some people sell for shchita. V'ruba lav klumhu. Now what about the fact that most people sell oxen for plowing? Irrelevant when it comes to monetary issue, according to Shmuel. V'hava le'kipago paga. And basically, once we take rov out of the equation, now we're at 50-50. It's a suffix. And we know the rule, if I'm trying to take money away from somebody, and all I have is just a suffix, it's not enough to take money out of somebody's hands. Ha-motzi mechaver la'varaya. The only way that I can take money out of somebody's hands is only if I have proof. Over here, from the buyer's perspective, what proof does he have? He doesn't have it. And again, when it comes to Shmuel, take rov out of the equation when it comes to monetary law. Next part of the Rashbam, critical. Now, what about Simchus' position? Now, what about Simchus' position, which is that whenever you have money in question, so what do you do with that money in question? You divide the money, you split the money. And the Rashbam consistently says throughout our Masechta, here's a good example, that we follow like the opinion of Simchus. Now, not all Rishonim agree with the Rashbam on that point, But the Rashbam holds like that, and we're learning the Rashbam. Rashbam says we hold like Simchus. Is Simchus on board with this, or is he not on board with this? The Rashbam is going to now make the argument, Simchus agrees with this over here. Why? There's a Sam Mishnah that follows like Simchus, that's the Mishnah back in Baba Kama. Fine. Rashbam is now going to argue that Simchus does not disagree with our point over here. Why? Because honey, me look at going short shenaga chasapara v'nim seubra b'tzida v'inyadula beizin heich hayah ma'isa im yalda kodem nikha o achar kain v'afilu taincha minayu tainas bari v'idach tainas shem akadam rinah hasam ukamo sabah v'yava menech sesafik b'perka chole tzikam alan chokin. So I'm going to go over one of the cases over here. I won't go over both cases. I'll go over the easier one. The one in Yavam is a little trickier, but it's the same basic point. What does Simchus say that money that is in question is going to be divided? So the classic case that's given, it's the first Mishnah in the fourth parak of Baba Kama. We did this not so long ago. It goes in the following scenario. Let's say we do a swap, that we exchange a pregnant cow, for a donkey. Okay, what's it called? An animal for animal swap. Okay, it's a regular trade. And I should say better, a simple trade. And we know the halacha is that one person takes one item, the other item immediately now is acquired by the other party. And so now here's what happened. What happened was is that the person who originally owned the cow pulled the donkey. So now kinyan has been made. So he acquired the donkey, and the other party now acquired the cow. But what happened was is that at the time, the cow was pregnant. The cow miscarried. And we don't know whether or not the miscarriage happened before or after the sale. And Simcha says, then, as a result of that, what do we do now regarding the question of the fetus? So we don't know. We don't know who the rightful owner is. That fetus is to be divided. Okay. That's Simcha's over there in that Mishnah Baba Kama. Now, the Rashbam says, fine. But there, Simcha says we're going to divide it. Why? Here comes the important line of the Rashbam. Mishum de'en yaduim bein tesla rishon. I'm sorry, that's the Yavam case. Mishum de'en yaduim bein tesla rishon v'yarshan ezikna ezikeno o ben zayin la'achron v'no shal yavam hu. Meaning, in those cases, the case in Baba Kama, which I did explain, the case in Yavamus, which I didn't explain, but in both of those cases, it's an unknown entity. We simply don't have the facts on the ground in terms of what happened or when it happened. But over here in our case, do we know what happened? Sure, we know what happened. There was a sale. The case itself is clear. And what happened in our case? A sale took place. And there was no clear communication between buyer and seller in terms of what the purpose of the sale was. So over here, a sale took place, and that's a definitive. That's a known entity. So, v'nizgala adavishaya nachan konu lechein, hachamot is simchus. Simchus would agree over here that the money's not to be divided. The law of mamon amuta basafek. This is not an example of mamon amuta basafek. Because again, monetary issues take rove out of the equation. Rove doesn't play a factor. Why? I'll get to that in just a little bit. But rove doesn't play a factor. So once we take rove out of the equation, so here it's a known entity. Did I sell you the ox? Sure. Absolutely. Money transferred? Once again, yes. So here we know what happened. And as far as the burden of clarification, the burden of clarification is on the buyer. The buyer needed to tell the seller, hey, you know, I'm only buying this oxen for the purpose of plowing. He didn't say that. That was his responsibility to clarify. And because he failed to clarify, and because rove is no longer a factor, so now what do we left with? A sale. And therefore the sale is valid. Even according to Simchus, this is not going to be a case of mamon amuta basafek. And because the buyer didn't clarify why he was buying it, so therefore he's going to lose. Fine. That is the Rashbam's explanation over here, that even according to Simchus's opinion, we're still going to say mamon amuta basafek, even according to Simchus, who says mamon amuta basafek cholkin, would agree over here that the sale is valid and there's not going to be any reimbursement of the money. back to the Gemara. Okay, so in the case of a sale of an ox, turns out the ox was crazy, turns out the ox was crazy, meaning even before the sale. But because the buyer didn't clarify why he was buying it, so therefore the sale stands according to Shmuel. Rav disagrees. Rav says no. Most people, when they buy an ox, is doing so for plowing, and so therefore the sale is a voided sale. To which the Gemara continues, and the Gemara asks the following question. Velechse, we're right in the middle of a short amud. Velechse yigavri dezavin lenechsasa lenechsasa ila raja raja. Gemara says, well, can't we at least assume that the seller knows why the buyer is buying it? And as the Rashbam over here explains, I'm not going to read it inside. As the Rashbam over here explains, meaning, well, let's assume right now that the seller and the buyer know each other. It's not, this is not an eBay transaction. It's not a Craigslist transaction. In other words, they know each other. And the seller knows that the buyer either has a field or he's got a schlock house. And so, isn't that enough circumstantial evidence that'll lead us to conclude that the seller should have known? So the Gemara says, in this case, no. Begavra dezavin lehachi ulahachi. So the Gemara says, no. That over here, actually, the buyer actually buys for both reasons. Meaning sometimes he buys for plowing, and sometimes he buys for shechting. So therefore, even if they had a prior relationship, and even though the seller, quote-unquote, knows the buyer over here in question, actually buys for both reasons. So therefore, once again, because there was no clear clarification between the buyer and the seller in terms of why he was buying it, so Shmuel's position stands. So now it's a question of Suffolk, but Suffolk, and even if it's a rove, but because it's monetary law, take rove out of the equation. And so therefore, the seller's position is going to be the defended position. Sale stands. Velechse. Demei hecheninu. So the Gemara says, now wait one second. When I buy an animal for plowing, I pay 20. I'm throwing out numbers over here. It happens to be the numbers I'm throwing out are the Rashbam's numbers. So, normally, an animal that is going to be used for plowing, I'm going to pay 20. An animal that's bought for shechting, I'm going to pay 10. And it makes sense. The numbers make sense. If I'm plowing with the animal, that's long-term usage of the animal. If I'm shechting the animal, that's one-time usage of the animal. So the Gemara says, now, aren't we going to say over here that let's take a look at how much was spent, and shouldn't that be enough circumstantial evidence to be a clear indicator of why the buyer is buying it? So the Gemara says, normally yes, in this case no. Why? Lo, tzricha, diyakar bisra v'kam b'demei raja. It happens to be that the cost of meat skyrocketed in this particular case, and the cost of meat, the cost of an animal for shechting is the same as the cost of the animal for plowing. The Rashbam over here, I'm not going to do this one inside, I highly recommend it. The Rashbam over here notes that not that long ago, in Baba Basra, on Daf Ayin Zion, the Gemara over there said, don't look at price as being an indicator of why you bought it. Our Gemara over here says you are allowed to look at price as an indicator of why you bought it. So our Gemara seems to be at odds with the Gemara that we learned previously. The Rashbam addresses that issue. The Rashbam makes a distinction. I highly recommend looking at the Rashbam inside. The Rashbam Divra Amaskal Velechze, he addresses that issue. In the meantime, however, let's just go on in the Gemara. Just one second. So it's too early to ask. It's a long sugya. It goes well after today's daf. So v'kam b'demei raja. So now the prices are the same. So to which the Gemara now is going to ask a really practical question. So we have now a seller and buyer who did not have a clear communication with one another. The buyer bought an animal from the seller. The buyer thought he was going to buy it for plowing. Turns out animal is a disaster. It's a train wreck. The animal is going all over the place. No good. The seller says to the buyer, you didn't tell me that. I thought you were going to buy it for shechting. I know most people don't. But when it comes to money, the word most is taken out of the discussion. So, I didn't know why you were buying it. You didn't tell me why you were buying it. Shmuel's position is that the sale stands. Rao's position is the sale is voided. Now, why not price be an indicator? Because the price for the two are the same in this particular case. To which the Gemara says, now if all this is true, so what kind of discussion are we having? Meaning, either the sale is voided or the sale is validated. In either case, what is the buyer getting? Either his cash back or an animal of the same value. So I hachi lamai nafkamina. So the Gemara says, so what difference does it make? But the Gemara says, no, but it does make a difference. Nafkamina latircha. Gemara says it makes the following difference. Look, from the buyer's standpoint, now even though in terms of finances, did he lose financially? No. Because even if he would have bought the animal for meat, it would have been the same cost. It would have been the same price. So financially, he didn't lose anything. The question over here is the question of a headache. Who's got to deal with this headache right now? In other words, according to Shmuel, the sale is valid. Which means now, whose headache is this animal? The buyer's headache. The buyer doesn't want such an animal. He's now going to go to the trouble, take this crazy animal, bring it back to the market, and sell it. Yes, it's true, he's going to get now his full money back, but it's his headache. According to Rav, it's the seller's headache. Because the sale is voided, according to Rav, so now the buyer goes back to the seller, says, this is not what I wanted, hands it back to the seller, so the seller hands him back his money, and the Gemara says, and that's the difference now in this case between Rav and Shmuel.
But I think if the animal is headache for him, he may be incentivized to sell at a reduced price.
That's an excellent point. The Gemara does not make your point, but I like it. Another excellent point. Hey, Chidami. So the Gemara says now, let's be more specific. We are now on the top of... Wow. We're now on the top of Tzadi Beis Amid Beis. Either like Elisha Lumimine Liakov Turbezuze. Now the Gemara says, now wait 1 second. If let's say the seller now no longer has any cash, what about the fact that he just got paid for the animal? Okay? Cash goes that quickly. So let's say the seller has no cash. So, and the seller now owes the buyer a reimbursement. So the seller can now say to the buyer, oh, look, I owe you the money. I don't have any cash. So you know what? Keep the animal. And in fact, the Gemara says, we say that. Damri Inshi. People say. And when the Gemara says people say, meaning this is a halachic reality. Amri Inshi. Min mani rishusech pari ipara. That when you go to somebody who owes you money and he doesn't have any cash on hand, so you take whatever you can get your hands on. Even if he has coarse bran. Doesn't matter. Whatever asset he has that you can get your hand on, that's what you take. So the Gemara says over here, again, we're looking for a practical difference between Rav and Shmuel. So we're saying whether the sale is valid or voided. Even if the sale is voided, if the seller has no money on hand, so then from the buyer's standpoint, now what does he have? Oh, he's holding on to the animal of the seller. So that will be the reimbursement. So the Gemara says, Lo tzricha de'ika lishtalu mimine. So the Gemara says, okay, so in our case over here, the seller is not cash poor. The seller does have cash on hand. So now, under these circumstances, we have a very real difference between Rav and Shmuel. According to Rav, the sale is voided. Therefore, the buyer can give back his money. And according to Shmuel, the sale is a valid sale. Okay, just I'll mention this briefly right now. The Rashbam over here quotes the opinion of Rabbeinu Chananel in terms of when he's entitled to reimbursement of cash, meaning if the sale is voided. So when can he expect back the cash? So you would say, I would say, and better than all that, the Rashbam says that if the seller has any cash on hand, so then the seller has to give a cash reimbursement on the voided sale. He quotes the opinion of Rabbeinu Chananel. Rabbeinu Chananel says that the seller only needs to give the cash reimbursement only if he has that cash on hand, meaning the cash that was given to him in exchange for the animal. It's an interesting opinion of Rabbeinu Chananel. It's a little bit difficult to defend. Rashbam doesn't like it, but I just mentioned it briefly. Let's just get to the two dots. So the Gemara says, Lishalumine, Rav Amar is a Mekach Taus, Basaru Bazlinan, Veruba Laraji Zavne. So the Gemara just summarizes now the opinions. Rav is of the opinion the sale is voided. Why? Most people buy animals for plowing. And since most people do that, so therefore, according to Rav, there should have been a fair expectation that the animal in question is a normal, calm animal, and therefore the animal wasn't. Turns out the animal never was. Or at least wasn't before the sale as well. So therefore he's expecting and should get, according to Rav, a full refund on the animal. Shmuel amar lecha ki azlin basaruba b'isura. Yeah, there is a concept of rov. But that's in the world of Isser. But in the world of money, we don't say that. B'mamon, lo. We do not follow majority when it comes to monetary law. Okay. This is a good stopping point. Okay, it's a very good stopping point. The Gemara will spend the rest of today's daf, tomorrow's daf, discussing and deliberating whose opinion it is. Tomorrow I'll start off with Ben already gave one explanation, which is what I was going to say. I'll start off tomorrow with why. Why according to Shmuel, which by the way is the halacha. Okay, Hedy, that was a spoiler alert. So why according to Shmuel do we not follow Rav when it comes to monetary law? So I'll start off tomorrow morning giving a couple of explanations of why that's the case.